My name's Ian Hunter.
You look just like him.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. So it's so obvious to want to go back in time, but I want to be here, and I want to go right for the present, or in this case, president, because I get this phone call again from, you know, the gentleman we were just talking about, and he says, okay, I'm about to send you something, and it's going to blow your mind. Now, I've been listening to everything since then, but this really feels like it's not the first political thing you've done. It's not the first commentary by any stretch you've done in your life.
It all says it in the last line, you know.
Right.
When I'm president, pigs are going to fly. I think it's a guy in a bar just sounding off, you know.
Particularly the song itself started out differently. It started out more about Superman and about other things. Is that
well,
true?
Yeah, Superman, president, you've got three syllables there, you know. And I thought, well, Superman, I'm past the stage. The president sounded a tad more dignified.
So are you saying that kryptonite at this point can't affect you? You're beyond kryptonite?
I'm Superman's dad.
Now, no. That's an interesting concept. What was he like as a son?
He was all right. I got two of them.
But there's lots of ooh-la-las and there's backgrounds, and that's something that's been a signature for you since day one. So when you were putting together this album, and you're thinking, you know, you say, well, you know, it's more of the same. But there's certain things that you certainly pay careful attention to. And one of those is kind of the trimmings, right?
I don't know.
But there's lots of ooh-la-las and there's backgrounds. And that's something that's been a signature for you since day one. So when you were putting together this album and you're thinking, you know, you say, well, you know, it's more of the same. But there's certain things that you certainly pay careful attention to.
I grew up 15, 16. That's when Elvis happened, Jerry Lee Lewis and all those, Little Richard. And that was the beginning, and that was the most exciting time for me ever. And there's still a bit of that in me. So, yeah, sha-la-las, I don't have a problem with that.
So why was it Elvis, of all the people that were... Because there was kind of like, there was Pat Boone here, and they were suddenly doing all of these things, and then suddenly... These songs turned to rock and roll.
It wasn't really Elvis, it was Jerry Lee Lewis. The first one I heard was Elvis, and nobody could say his name in England. It was such a peculiar name, you know, Elvis Presley at that time. And then Jerry Lee Lewis came out, and I thought that was Jerry Lewis having a day off, you know.
There's a big difference.
Yeah, Little Richard, the Platters, I love the Platters, you know. It just all opened up, and before that, I really didn't know what I was supposed to be here for. And then I realized I was a huge fan. That's what I was here for. And I remained a fan for many, many years. I mean, I never particularly wanted to meet people, but I just loved their music. You know, Chuck Berry, Everly's. I loved the Everly's. You know, it was just fantastic time. And, of course, you know, it hits you at 15, 16. That's a fantastic time to be hit by anything, you know. It always stays with you. You know, I've got 14-year-olds that were 14 when they first saw me. They still come. 14 and 15, that's a heavy age.
Now, speaking of youngsters, since 2001, you've had yourself an interesting band. And I always think that, you know, it's kind of like, did that band exist as the Rant band? Or did you give them their nom de plume?
No, when I did Rant, I did an album called Rant in 2001. And the band there's three of them left now. But they're basically New York guys from the sound and, you know, boroughs. We've had a couple of changes over the years, but it's been, 12 years? Nine guys overall. Still the same drummer, still the same color man. And it's just gotten better and better, you know. The last time in, this album, when I'm president, was 3 days. The band, you know. Andy and I went back in and mixed later.
3 days?
3 days. Power and passion, that's what we were after.
Start to finish, 3 days.
Blast off.
So what do you say to bands that spend their time, you know, 3 weeks in the studio trying to... Craft.
I've done it. I mean, it knocks it into the ground. It's awful. But, you know, if you're not very good, that's what you do. I mean, I wasn't very good for a long, long time. And so it takes you much longer in the studio, you know. And also it was like, well, we'll write in the studio. And that's always fatal. Write them before you go in. It's cheaper. But it was quite fashionable for a while. And we never knew any different, you know. So we sort of did that. I mean, I would have the music probably, but I wouldn't have the lyric. You know, you'd still be... Once Bitten, Twice Shy was written in the studio, you know, as we went along. I was always jealous of people like Neil Young because he could go in the studio 24 hours a day, any time of the day or any time of the night. You know, we couldn't do that. There was a clock that we had to watch, you know. There was never that much money about.
Somebody asked me today, they said, oh, you're interviewing Ian Hunter. How old is he? And I didn't have a perception because I looked at the dates on the records, and then I did the math. Yeah. And unlike so many bands today, when you start, now you were in bands before Mott the Hoople.
Yeah, yeah.
But you entered that part of rock and roll, you weren't 21 years old.
No, I was 29 when I started.
Yeah, so that's kind 69. Of that's kind of old, is it not?
To oh, yeah, even it was, start a band? Yeah, we knocked 7 years off, you know.
Yeah.
Ronson always said, knock 7 years off, tell him you were in hospital, so it doesn't count.
but seriously, you know, so you started at 30, and now you're still doing this.
I'm coming up to 74.
Yeah, I was going to say, you haven't had your birthday yet, so if I do the math with 39, right? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you make your money and then you'd get lazy and then you get bored with being lazy and you sort of come back. And then coming back is not quite as easy as you think it is. But ever since Mick died, the last, you know, decade.
Right. And that's tough.
Working hard on it, you know, because yeah. It's fragile. You never know what's going to happen. But, you know, you wake up every day, you've got a band, everything works. I'm busy. I'm busier than I've ever been. So let it ride, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, how does it feel? When is the last time you played the Isle of Wight?
I didn't.
You that's never? Ah, you see, there you go.
That's
see,
why that's I'm doing it.
I didn't know. So let's talk about that. See, you never did play the Isle of Wight in all those years.
Nah, I never did. So I thought, when it came up, I thought, yeah, we'll definitely do that. And I know the guy, Giddens, that runs it. He used to gig me and Mick a while back. We get on really well.
Now, are you intrigued? Have you looked at, do you know what the lineup is and all the people that you're going to be surrounded by?
I saw Clem last night. I know Blondie's doing the following night.
Oh, really? Blondie's doing it?
I think it's The Killers. Wow. Right. We're doing the Saturday.
You talk a lot about, and your songs have been about the underdog. So tell me a little bit about, does that come from the way you grew up?
Yeah.
Every single byline of Mott the Hoople was very well-known band that didn't live up to its exact potential. And every time I read that, I think, wait a minute. You know, what exactly does that mean? You know, so what is the definition of being an underdog? Because that's not being an underdog.
Not getting it. Well, yeah. But, you know, when I got into it, like you say, it's 29 years old when I actually turned pro. I had a lot of jobs before that, you know, factory jobs, milling, grinding and all the rest of it. And so, you know, these people are like, at that time anyway, it wasn't much fun. It smelt. You came home full of oil and you cleaned yourself and you went out and then you were black again about half an hour later. You know. So that was my background. My father always thought I was crap. So it was like a reverse psychology, you know, well, I'll show you. And then at school, I'd roll in there with a poem or something like that and the guy would go red in the face and say, you've stole this. You've stolen this from I wrote about it in 23 Ace Swanell. So again, it was reverse psychology. It was like, he thinks I got that out of a book. It must be good, you know. And that's how I came up, and so I guess the underdog thing, yeah. And there's plenty of underdogs come to see me, you know. I attract them.
When Bowie, he offered you Suffragette City, and we don't need to cover that story. But you got all the young dudes, and the fact of the matter is that in some ways you primed his career, did you not?
He had this manager, De Vries, and De Vries said, De Vries wasn't ready to manage. So what De Vries said to David was, go back home and write. And David was real itchy because, you know, Space Oddity was number one. But he went and did that. And it was during that time that he was messing about with all the young dudes. He was doing it in a key that was lower and he was doing it with alto saxes in the hooks and stuff like that. And he must have just got bored with it. And we came along at the right time and injected, you know, new venom into the wound there.
And then, you know, one of the things that I read you say is that when Mick Ronson passed, that was your impetus to come back.
Yeah.
And was that to carry on the amazing tradition of the relationship that the two of you had?
Well, you know, I loved him and he went and it was like, it's weird when you're standing right next to somebody and they've got it and you haven't and you can't do anything about it. And it went on for 2 years. And he was fabulous throughout the whole thing, but it really does bring it home. I mean, my parents had gone, family had gone, but this was my best mate and it was, this is that fragile, you know, get back down. Because we were both lazy. I mean, we weren't good for each other. We were lazy. I just thought, I got to get back down and do this. I was not feeling good about what I was doing anyway. And when he died, that got me serious about it again. And I'm glad it did. Because, you know, makes you much happier when you're really trying hard. You know, whether it's coming off or not, beside the point.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs is The Bread, and then a bunch of songs you want to play in between.
I'd like, if it was me, it would be Lorraine Ellison's Stay With Me Baby.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. They just featured that in Pirate Radio again, the movie. What an amazing track.
Yeah, that was a weird story behind that.
Tell me, because I don't know.
It was, she was with I forget who it was. I think it was the guy at Atlantic. She went into a Sinatra session, and Sinatra had thrown a fit and walked out. And the best musicians in the whole of America were sitting there with nothing to do. And she had the guy with it. Was it Melcher? He had all the arrangements. And it was all done. That album was done in 3 hours. With Sinatra's.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And then she did two records. Then she went back to Philadelphia. Mother was sick. And that was it. She just died, I don't know, in the 80s, I think.
Amazing.
Yeah.